It's time to game classy.
Steve, are you there?
Classy.
Hold on a second. Your volume is fairly low.
Nice. I've never been told that before.
Yeah, that's true. You probably have never been told that you're too quiet.
Yep, that's never happened.
As you're throwing your hands up in the air a la George Costanza, screaming how everything is not right with the world.
That's right. It's all wrong, Jerry.
It's all wrong.
It's all wrong, Jerry. Everything's wrong.
Oh, man.
It was rigged, Jerry. Rigged. You lost by every objective. Your opponent tabled you. No, he cheated.
I thought you were doing Trump for a second, but I guess it can't apply to that as well.
Yes. Yeah. It's the same. It's the same thing.
I literally just, I know, I promise we won't talk too much about the orange Cheeto today. The Cheeto Mussolini. I don't know any of the other fun nicknames that people like to call him. But I was just talking this morning about how, oh, and by the way, I am recording. I made sure that that's happening. I was just talking how, like, the last 2 weeks have just seemed like the final season of a TV show. Like, they had the big season finale, which was the election, where, you know, Trump thinks he's going to win, but then at the very end, it's like a black comedy, like an Armando Iannucci comedy, like V.
Yeah, or Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Or Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Like, where just watching him, like having him watch Fox and Friends, where like the election like turns against him. You just have
no, it's not even that, Steve. He thinks he's winning, right? And it's like, because all the states are like positive for him. And then all of a sudden, it's like, as he's like shaking people's hands, like, congratulations, Mr. President, on your reelection. Like, you pan into the TV, a very slow pan, as they're saying, well, we have to keep in mind that there are hundreds of thousands of uncounted mail-in ballots. You know, after the entire season of him saying, like, don't send in mail ballots. You know, they're not safe, you know, or whatever else have you. And like, and so it's like, and everyone knows what's going to happen because they're talking about mail-in ballots. And then all of a sudden you hear,
and then you see the electoral number just starting to go up for Biden. Yeah.
Well, I mean, even so, and then you, so this is the start of the new season, this last 2 weeks, and it starts off with the corona
comeback.
No. It starts off with the Four Seasons, with the Four Seasons press conference. That's where it starts off. Because in my head, Trump is pregnant, so he can't be on the show that often.
Right.
So they have to work around it. So the main character for the first couple episodes is going to be Giuliani. So he does like, he has to like do this press conference about how everything is rigged. And so he signs up at the Four Seasons, but he finds out it's a Four Seasons landscaping.
You from the Four Seasons? I'm from a Four Seasons. Season. Enough for me.
Exactly. And then you have the whole thing with like his like fake hair, like dripping down his face. And it's just like this horrendous series of like, if there weren't immigrants being forcibly, you know, given hysterectomies and like all this terrible, terrible stuff going on in the world, it would be a funny comedy.
Yes.
But because it's so real, it's just not.
And horrible. Real and horrible.
Yeah. It's truly horrible, horrifying how bad it is. It's like a very, very bumbling coup. It's almost like a Peter Sellers movie from the 1960s. Like that's how bumbling it is.
Yes.
But anyway, that's my take. Hey, welcome to Game Classy. We are into week two of the fall of the Roman Empire.
Yes.
I think that's the best way to put it. I am your host, Joe, and with me as always is my co-host, Steve.
Hello.
Today we're going to be talking about, I don't know, the fact that they're bringing back Prince Sigvald for Warhammer Age of Sigmar. Woo!
Mr. Sigvald, the mirror guy.
Sigvald, he was like the fancy boy from
the mirror guy. He had the rule where if you rolled a one, he would be staring at his own reflection instead of fighting.
Yes, that's exactly it. They're bringing him back.
He was a key component to my ultimate Chaos Death Star list. In what was it? It was 8th edition. I don't remember. Like, I think now my memory is a bit faulty, so this could have been 7th edition, but it might have been 8th edition. So this was the ultimate cheese ball chaos list that I've ever come up with. I think it might be the, like, outside of Tzeentch Demons, but Tzeentch Demons were just broken top to bottom. So outside of that, I think this was the most degenerate list I've ever made. So it's a huge block of Chosen, and the Chosen are marked of shit.
You can do this. Come on.
I think it was Tzeentch because he wanted to get the ward save. Or no, it was Nurgle. because you get the armor save improvement. Then you take Sigvald, you put him in the front rank. You take the Chaos Marauder special character, you put him in the front rank. You take the Icon Bearer, the Exalted Champion of Nurgle on Palanquin with Icon, but he takes the Icon of Khorne Frenzy. And then what was the other thing you put in there? There was a Chaos Lord of Tzeentch. So basically it was every special character, it was just about every special character in the book in the front rank. And then you had your Chaos Chosen Champion, and then one unit, one regular goon, so you get your regular attacks. And the long and short of the unit was like, you gave them the extra gear as well. You basically, like, it was like the unit was over, like, I think it was a 1300 point unit, and then the rest of the army was just Marauder horsemen and dogs, so you just go for the table corners with that. Ooh. But you had this block that essentially had a 1+ rerollable armor save with additional attacks, always strikes first, had like two, it had a regeneration, a ward save, everything was frenzied because you had the Banner of Rage, so all of your special characters got tons of extra attacks. You had the Chosen Champion Chaos Marauder special character, because if they tried to stop your setup by like using a character, because the only thing that could really hurt the characters were like other enemy general level characters. So if they tried to stop it with that, you had the irrefusable challenge from the Chaos Marauder champion dude.
Is that like a physical challenge from a double?
Yes, yes, except you can't refuse it. You can't take the trivia question instead of the physical challenge. You have to have the physical challenge.
Ah, nice.
So
Mark Summers comes out on the battlefield.
Yes. So
you washing have, his hands.
So you have that guy. So if they try to stop it with another general, you just challenge their character so that you take him out of the fight. And and of course, then I mentioned the unit has regeneration as well. So it has it basically has everything, and it has always strikes first because you have Sigvald. So like the most degenerate unit possible. Like we ran it against everything, and like there was nothing that could beat it. Like
how many points was it total?
It was like 1500 points.
Yeah, see, that's where it becomes an issue.
Well, no, it's this thing, but it wasn't an issue because you would win the game because they couldn't destroy the unit. Because you would basically be up, because remember in old fantasy, you had to kill units to get points. So nothing could kill the unit. It was essentially unbreakable. Nothing would ever beat it in combat. You deny them 1500 points. So their only options to win the game are to try and kill all of your shit units, the ones that don't matter, while simultaneously avoiding this giant block and scoring other objectives while you're basically guaranteed corners, because you put a unit of Chaos Warhounds in each corner, like on the actual physical edge of the table. So they're the farthest farthest physical distance possible from any other models.
This just makes me nauseous thinking about it.
That's plus 200 points.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It was the dumbest thing ever. Like I was just like, I wonder if this would be good. And then like I played a few games with it. I'm like, this is the fucking stupidest thing I've ever. Like we were just trying to figure out how to beat it. So like we did we were like double Bloodthirster flank charge, and then front charge from an enemy unit of Chaos Warriors and a chariot. All of those things lost to the combat.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. It sounds like they would.
Yeah, it was so stupid. It was really funny. So like all you could really do is march block it, and like if you had like an insane amount of shooting, you could like kind of like kill a few guys. But their save was so good, and they had wards, and they had regeneration. It was like, it was just a nightmare. It was funny. It wasn't something I would ever have like take into a tournament, because honestly, the biggest drawback to it was boring as shit.
Yeah. I mean, like that's what every one of these like Death Star unit, like big monster, I'm going to win every combat armies is like, they're just boring. They're boring as fuck.
Yeah. It was super boring. I was
going back to our favorite Storm of Chaos Khorne Demon list, where it was, you just wound them up and push them forward and that's it.
Yeah, but that one's at least fun because you could play that one drunk and you have more than one unit.
Well, that's like, true. I mean, and back in the 2000s tournaments, if you could not play drunk, you could not play.
That's right. Yeah. So I mean that one's not as bad. Like there's a
Hey, Steve, difference. Remember social interaction?
I mean vaguely. I'm okay. I'm thriving, man. I don't need social interaction.
Yeah, that's what you say as you're sitting there with tissue boxes on your feet and
I'm not the aviator about
you're
it.
You're not Howard Hughes-ing it right now.
Yeah, I'm not Howard Hughes-ing it.
I would put that it's almost been a year since I've seen you. Mm-hmm. And I would say that I'm in my head, you are Howard Hughes right now with the big bushy beard, long nails, and tissue boxes on your feet collecting jars of urine.
Well, if you come over, I will hold you at gunpoint and tell you to get in the spruce moose.
I said get in.
So I think it's actually funny that you mentioned that, because this lockdowns and the coronavirus and all this horrible shit happening has truly shown who is actually an introvert and who is actually an extrovert. Because, you know, there's always people who are like, I'm so introverted.
It's very true.
Like now, those people who would be like, I'm an introvert, who are just like, I've got to get outside. It's like, I guess you're not that much of an introvert. Me, who've always been like, yeah, I'm kind of an introvert. I've been like, feeling good. Celebrate.
I've known you for a while, Steve. I would not call you an introvert. I would just say that you're just very much your own person. Like you can function by yourself very, very well. And that's not necessarily an introvert, because I think you are very much an extrovert in very many ways. But I know you can function at both on fairly well. I can do the same. I don't like working solo. You really enjoy working solo. You don't like having anybody around you.
Yeah, I love working solo.
With my current job as it is, I do not like working solo. I like having like a team and everything else, but that's just my current job. I think if I had a different job, it'd be a little bit different, but.
Interesting. Yeah. I have to agree, I guess, cause I guess like to be like a classic introvert, I would have to be a little reserved with people and not loud or.
Yeah. Like you'd have to you'd hover in the back in conversations while the Steve that I know is actually at the forefront of the conversation calling people an idiot.
Fair. Okay. No. I get what you're saying. I think you're right. I think you are correct.
What? You think that? You fool.
Hang on. I need everyone to sit down, because I'm going to have to go into the deep dive into why you're wrong. And I've got bullet points. I'll have examples. If I had a laptop handy, I'd get you a PowerPoint, but I don't have that handy. So look,
chill out. These people they're just talking about how much they like Kraft mac and cheese.
Look, first of all, if you look back at the original Iron Warriors novel, some might say.
The original Iron Warriors novel. Yikes. Oh, man. That's so true. On so many levels. Yes. So getting back, what we were talking about today is the Warhammer had their big preview. We're recording this on Saturday afternoon. They just, I think they're still actually doing the preview as it's going on. Probably 10 more minutes, maybe 5 more minutes, they're going to do another drop. But right now they're talking about all the new Slaaneshi army stuff that's coming out.
It's Decadence and Decay.
Yeah. They're doing a whole thing right now. So they're showing off all the Slaaneshi Chaos Warriors and Marauders that they're going to be releasing.
And there's a bunch of stuff for 40K. There's a Plague Crusade thing for Death Guard.
Yeah, they're doing another Warzone thing like they did with whatever that last one was.
And a Dark Angels Codex.
Yeah. Woo! Dark Angels Codex without the Lionel Johnson.
And a Dark Elves Codex.
Dark Eldar.
Dark Eldar, my bad.
No. They're the Drukhari, Steve.
Yeah, okay, whatever.
And then we can't call them the Dark Eldar.
And then some actually pretty cool-looking dudes for Necromunda, who I have no idea who the fuck they are. Are they new?
Yeah, well, no, that's the House Vansar. So that's like the kind of like boringest house in Necromunda in the old school. They were like the ones who are just like...
They look totally new, though. I don't remember this.
Yeah, they gave them a bunch of like their thing in this new edition is they're kind of like the most well-funded.
They look Tron as fuck. I mean, I like the models.
I hate the models. I think they look stupid.
I mean, they look Tron as fuck. That my issue with them is that they don't look like 40K universe models. They look like Infinity models.
It's very true. They do look like Infinity models.
I mean, I as I said, like, I mean, I think they look cool. I like the models, but they do not scream like this is the grimdark 40K aesthetic to me. They're like, yeah, okay, these are gonna be right next to my anime mecha robots.
We playing Tau? No, I think
also the new. More importantly, actually, I forgot. Wait. We buried the lead here.
Are you talking about
the most new, important release?
The biggest release.
The biggest release, the most important release, the release that everyone should care about the absolute most, no fucking question, motherfucking new Treebeard model.
They do finally have a new Treebeard model that probably will not fall apart every time it falls over on the battlefield from being too top heavy.
In addition to that, he looks awesome.
Yeah, he does.
He looks great. The sculpt is fantastic. Like, his face is perfect. He looks exactly like he looks in the movie. The Merry and Pippin are excellent.
The Merry and Pippin actually are the more impressive part to me. Because for me, like Treebeard, there's probably enough 3D models that are done of him that they could literally just take the 3D model work and just put it into a figure, you know?
Yes.
But the Merry and Pippin, I think, look spot on, especially the Merry.
Yes, yeah, the Merry and the Pippin look excellent. And they also paid attention to the Merry and the Pippin on foot versions. So the Merry and the Pippin on Treebeard are normal sized, I believe. I'd have to double check. But the on foot versions specifically are taller than regular hobbits because they drank the Entrout.
Oh, did they do that?
Hmm. Yes. So they went so far as that, which is pretty dope. also, the Chaos Warband is sick. I want the Chaos Warchief lady to marry me. and by marry me, I mean throw me over her shoulder and take me back to her cave or whatever.
Yeah, so what Steve's talking about is part of the preview is, and that's what I think they're talking about right now, is all the new Dire Chasm stuff that they're releasing in December for the fourth season of Underworlds. So they have the Khargroth's Ravagers. Because Games Workshop just decided that you don't need to pronounce any of their figures' names. Why do you need to do that? You know, they figure it's best if you just throw a bunch of consonants and vowels together and then let you fight it out in the game store about how you could, this is another thing that Steve would be like, argue about, like, okay, everybody shut up and sit down. This is how you're going to pronounce everything.
It's not Tiznizich. It's Zeech.
Tiznizich.
It's not Tiznizich. It's Zeech.
Yes.
The only acceptable alternates are if you call them Crone and Necrones, because you can have Crone Berserkers versus Necrones.
Crones. I'm trying to think. I say Zeench, Crone, Slaanesh.
Marnius, cool guy.
Marnius, cool guy. No, I'm just trying to think of. I say the Nurgles. I don't say Nurgle.
Yeah, the Nurgles.
The Nurgles. Zeench, Zeenchies, Slaaneshi.
I'd say though, like, I mean, we were joking a bit about Sigvald, but that new Sigvald model is fucking dope as shit. I think the model's really cool.
Like, you have to put him on the battlefield and go, but like, Sigvald.
Oh yeah, you have to lavish as much praise on that miniature as he would lavish upon himself. So you'd better be ready to just glad hand the fuck.
You know what the funny thing about this figure is? I'm looking at it right now. Is that it looks more like Sanguinius than the Sanguinius model from Forge World?
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, if there's one thing I can complain about Forge World the most, aside from all of the other things that I'm going to complain about, the Primarchs are just so dumb looking in comparison to how cool they could be.
Like, I mean, the ones that Workshop makes are good. The Workshop makes good looking Primarchs.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's only been three, and
well, I'm talking about the Chaos ones too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's only been three: two Chaos one and Marnius cool, not Marnius, Rabudi. Rabudi Gilliam.
Roboot Ghouli Man.
Yeah. They're the only ones that have been released, and they do look really cool, especially if you don't put the regular head on
Rabudi.
I use his helmet.
The helmet is much better. The helmet is just better. I don't get the whole, like, no helmet.
The Forge World ones are supposed to be more, like, realistically proportioned, but they're just, some of them are just misses to the nth degree.
Yeah, for sure. No, I agree.
Yeah. But yeah, that's they are previewing all of the new. Ooh, I got a message. Sorry about that.
Ooh,
ugh. A friend of mine just got his 3D printer working, and he's printing a Warhound Titan, and he's like super excited about it, and he keeps sending me like pictures of each part, and I'm like, yes, that I've done this six times. I know what the parts look like. I'm very proud of you for getting there, but print them all out, put them together and paint them. Then I will be impressed.
I like it.
You know, there's so many people who get so excited about just having a fucking figure. It's like, no, put it together and paint it. That's the whole point. That's the end game of this hobby. Yes. You know? Like let's get that way. Let's get to there first. But of course, anyway. Yeah, they're finally doing a Slaaneshi army for Age of Sigmar. So, and they showed a couple of things which are just, I guess, I don't know if they're both warriors or, yeah, they kind of look like warriors or like different types of warriors. The Slaaneshi, the Simbarish twin souls are mortals who have forged dark pacts with the lesser demons of Slaanesh.
So they're like chosen, basically.
Yeah, they're chosen. And then you have the Myrmidesh Painbringers.
Yeah, they all look pretty cool.
They look like dark elves or dark Eldar.
They always kind of had that aesthetic though. Like that was the thing, because there was always that divided aesthetic for the Slaanesh stuff, because there was the Slaanesh character models, like the dude with that dope fucking Trojan helmet who was on the tit snake.
And he ran on the booby snake, yeah.
Yeah, he was on the tit snake. And then there was the other one where he was on foot and he had that same like dope Trojan helmet look. And like there were always those few specific Slaaneshi characters that had that really cool, like sleek Trojan aesthetic that kind of like was in between like a chaos warrior but a little more svelte, so they kind of had the dark Eldar look, because I mean, oh well, the dark elf look, because the dark elves were Slaanesh, like that was the whole gimmick, is like they were being seduced by Slaanesh, so it made sense to have that bridge for the look. But nothing else in the chaos line looked correct for Slaanesh, so like it was always kind of weird when you had that, like, you know, those like kind of like live like chaos champions, and they're just like next to like the bulky like Nordic looking like, oh, we are big chaos man, like,
yeah,
dudes. It just kind of didn't look right. So I think this is a great move for them, because they, you know, they haven't had, there have, every faction has a specific more, this is the last key for finalizing all of the chaos gods to have their specific unit as models, because Nurgle obviously has the Blight Kings. Korn has multiple. They have the not marauder Korn dudes, or the blood stokers.
Yeah, they had like two or three units, like, yeah, that are specifically
right. And Korn has a bunch of mortals that are specifically for Korn. Yeah. Nurgle has the Blight Kings and the Blight Kings on flies. And then
Tzeentch has the acolytes.
Yeah, they have the acolytes. They also have
Tzeentch is kind of the opposite of Nurgle, where Nurgle has the big beefy chaos warriors. Tzeentch has the marauders.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Tzeentch stuff that's stronger is the demons. It's flip flop for Nurgle for sure, where their demons are like these more spindly like horde stuff, and the mortals are the elites.
Yeah, and then and Tzeentch is the opposite, which is nice. And then you'll have Slaanesh, which we don't really know how it will play yet, but
ooh. We'll see. I mean, it should be good. Like, I mean, Sigvald was one of the best characters in
Sigvald.
He was one of the best characters in prior editions. Just absolutely super strong. So we'll see.
I didn't know you had such love for Sigvald. That makes me kind of happy.
Oh, dude, he was so fucking good. He was so strong. He was one of the strongest fucking characters in the book.
I mean, since the funny thing is that way that he came up today, because I've been, you know, I'm working on my sixth edition project, which is, you know, just going back and making armies for as many sixth edition armies as I can, like fully putting them together, painting them, just 2150 points. That's it. I'm not going to do that thing that I used to do where it's like, well, I also kind of want to do the, nope, we're going to stick to 2150. If there's something else that I want to paint for that army, I will have to either somehow fit it into the army or push it to the side until, you know, I could come back to it later.
Yeah, but, I had a Sigvald. I was a big fan of Sigvald, specifically because he was the one unit in Warhammer that I can think of that actually had a drawback that seemed to, that was worth taking versus his upside.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, and that's the thing too, is like I've been looking at those old, like seeing those old character models for the armies and seeing which ones I'd like. You know, I have I was thinking about doing a Chaos Warrior army a la Storm of Chaos, which the Chaos Warrior army in Storm of Chaos was not very broken.
No, the broken thing was the demons. Demons were broken.
Slayers.
Slayers were broken, but not in the normal sense of broken. And then the Sea Guard were pretty busted.
Sea Guard were pretty busted, but I mean they weren't too bad. You were paying a lot of points.
Sea Guard was a broken army, but it still adhered to rock paper scissors. Like you could still lose to a paper with that rock. It was the best. It was arguably the best rock at what it did. but you could still lose to paper with that army.
With the
demon armies, like if you were playing a properly built demon army, I would not expect you to lose to anything other than another demon army, or get a draw against the Slayer army, because that's why the Slayer army was broken. The Slayer army was broken because no one could beat it, but it also couldn't win.
but it could not win.
Yeah, it could not win. But man, would you get like I remember one of my buddies who played like heavily. He loved dwarves, and he got like super into the Slayer army. He went to a big tournament, which was 6 rounds. And he had 1 win and 5 draws.
But that's the thing too, is like, you got to remember that the Storm of Chaos, like that army is very, very thematic. You're not supposed to win with the Slayer army. That defeats the purposes of a Slayer army.
Because you got the draw by your guys giving up points when they died, or not giving up points when they died, because they died to things that is an honorable death. So they're worth 1 point when they die.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, and that's exactly it. By the way, I don't know if we talked about this on the last cast. Speaking of Slayers, Games Workshop Black Library has finally started doing audiobooks for the classic fantasy novels.
Oh, nice. Is Brian Blessed?
No, what's his name? He does like all of he's one of the better narrators for... God, why can't I think of his name? He's one of the better narrators for the Black Library stuff. God damn it. Now I can't think of what it is off the top of my head. Let me check. What do I got? Oh, you know what? I'm going to check my phone because it's on my Audible on my phone. It's not Guy Haley's the author, and William King's the author. Read by Jonathan Keeble. That's who it is. He does a really good job, and right now they're only really doing the Felix and Gotrek stuff because that's Games Workshop, and they're like, people only like Felix and Gotrek from the original, Black Library stuff, and people are like, no, we like all of this stuff. We're just kind of Games Workshop's, Warhammer Fantasy nerds. You can pretty much give us anything and we're going to listen to it. And they're like, no, they only like Felix and Gotrek. And you're like, but no, people got really invested in this book or this book. And like, no. Actually, I'm giving it more of a nasal than it should be. No, they only truly like Felix and Gotrek.
You know, I have a good little voice reminded me of something, and I just wanted to I'm gonna throw out an old ass Games Workshop experience from working their retail thing, which was one of the funnier moments, and it's just an odd thing, but we used to meme in the bunker with customers and some of the other employees about Beaky Marines, just in general, just like because we thought Beakies were kind of like stupid, and. There was a guy who was in town from the UK, and he was doing his immersion course army. And now, obviously, most people are not going to know what the immersion course is. But the immersion course is essentially they took staff from regular workshop stores and took them to the battle bunker, and they made them do a whole bunch of like things that were not normal like for staff to do. So you had to make an army, you had to run an event, you had to do a whole bunch of stuff. And it was essentially a program designed to like create managers, but I mean, whatever.
There was a lot of great stuff that happened, like stuff that was really important, but there was also a lot of really questionable stuff that they made them do.
There was a ton of shenanigans as well.
And that I think that in the 2020 world, that if, someone tried to do that to me, I would probably sue. Not going to lie there. Some of that stuff was borderline illegal.
Yes, so there were shenanigans, of course.
Not borderline illegal in terms of like safety or anything like that, but I mean there was some like questionable sexual stuff that if I didn't want to do, I shouldn't have to do. Like it really was not within the scope of my job.
there was deviancy all over the place, but it doesn't matter because literally everyone involved in all aspects of it, it doesn't work for Games Workshop anymore.
No, actually they do, but that's besides the point.
Well, most of the people that I know don't. So like all the ones I can think of off the top of my head don't, but that's regardless. Yes. So he was working on his Space Marine army because they had to do 1,000-point list. That was one of the things you had to do. You had to do 1,000-point list from start to finish in a certain period of time. And he was working on Space Marines, and he's just like, everyone is silent because everyone's hobbying. It's just the staff hobby time, and there's a lull in the conversations. No one's talking. And he's just like, I'm really disappointed in this box of Marines. I was hoping for a lot more B keys. and me and like three other staff who always joke about the B keys just start fucking dying. Like we're laughing to the point where we're just fucking coughing. Just the level of like distraught like tone in his voice when he's like, there weren't enough B keys. And like now literally I can still talk to a couple people and just look at them and just go like, I was really hoping for more B keys, and they just go like, oh, "I want more B keys." Yeah, so there you go. There's a random, very in memory from like 20 years ago, Games Workshop.
You know, and that's the fun thing too. And like, I think a lot of, God, I miss those old like staff paint nights. You know?
Yes.
Like, because it was one of those things where you could go, and some of our listeners might like truly remember this and or have these kind of wishes. It was a very, very much a invite only painting night where you didn't have customers. You didn't have those truly annoying customers that only came in because they wanted to be your friend, like, or they didn't have friends, which was really, really sad. And it was one of the saddest parts about working for Games Workshop are those people who come in and because you're their only source of contact of humanity.
Yes.
And it's like nice that you could be that person. Some people were very nice, but it's like, at the other hand, you're kind of just like, oh God, I can't deal with these people anymore. Yeah,
back to the introvert extrovert conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, you're like, I can't do this anymore. But you'd have these nice nights where you paint for 2 or 3 hours or maybe play a game, and it was just staff. And so we all kind of were on the same page when it came to like, you know, fucking around or what we were talking about, which was, it was nice. I truly appreciated it.
Yeah, no, it was good. And I definitely got a lot more work done when I was doing that too, because like, I knew I could just grab something and just like hammer through it. And like, there would be enough to distract me, but not enough to distract me from stopping working on my project, which was usually a paid commission job.
Yeah.
Cause that was the thing, like for my own stuff, and like my own stuff never became difficult to work on until after I had like done commissions for years. So like that was the opposite, but like when I was doing commissions, like commission stuff was always hard to work on. Cause it's like, I could be doing this other thing instead of more work. Cause that's the thing too. Like people aren't like, you know, obviously you do the hobby for fun, but like when you're doing it for, you know, commission and like people are like, hey, you know, I want this, I need this done by this time. It's work, you know? Yeah. It's paint. It's still painting, but it's work. So I was putting in, you know, when I go back and think about it, I'm like, no wonder I got fucking burnt out on the hobby. I was putting in like 22 hour days.
Yeah. And
it's like sleeping for like working at the bunker for 12 hours straight, going back, doing 6 hours of work, and then sleeping for like 3 or 4 hours, waking up and painting.
Well, yeah. And it's not only that, but it's like these people, like there's no love in it. There's no, like, that's what I always feel about like having someone paint your figures. I know that not everybody is a great painter, but it's kind of like, I feel it's very hollow. it's a very hollow experience. I know, not to the person getting the money, but, and then generally people are, it's the same thing of like when you see like people who draw naked pictures of anime characters for money. And then there's people who are like, I would like this picture done. And then you're like, okay, here's the amount of money it costs. And then they're like, that's too much money. And you're like, wait, who is the one who is doing this picture for you of this thing that you specifically want?
Can you draw them farting?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I will be more than happy to paint this anime or to draw this anime picture, this anime girl farting on Pikachu. I don't know too much about fetish hentai, so I'm just going to assume that that's what it's all a lot about. I know you're the more the expert, but I don't think we should get that deep into it on the podcast.
It's just a meme. It's just a, can you draw them farting is a meme.
Can you draw them farting? And then the person's like, okay, this is exactly what I want. Okay, this is how much money it's going to cost. That's too much money. And it's
that's a classic of for exposure of just like people like just completely devaluing like, you know, commission work, commission.
Well, it's not even the for exposure. It's just like they just want it cheaper. And it's like, yeah, you can get it cheaper. You send it to Sri Lanka and then you wait a year to get your figures back. That's how it works.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't do commissions. The only commission work I don't do anymore is I do 3D printing for people, which is nice. You know, I don't even care half the time. I just want to print something. Like, it's more about the challenge of printing something or getting it together, seeing it being built out, whatever that is. I like that.
Oh, sure.
I usually just charge for either for like my resin printing. I usually just charge for material. Depending, if it's like someone I know, I usually just charge for material. If it's the plastic printing, I usually will encompass like time on the machine because that takes far longer to print out the bigger stuff. But and even then, it's like so. I someone was asking about something I had printed and I painted it, and then so they text me and they go like, "Oh, do you do commissions?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, I no problem. Whatever you're looking for, and this is how much it's going to cost, and blah blah blah." And they're like, "Can you print this? So like, can you print this Star Wars clone trooper?" "Oh yeah, absolutely." And then they go like, "Okay, how much does it cost?" I'm like, "Oh, that's not going to cost that much. It'll cost $10, right?" "Oh, that's perfect. Okay." So I say like, "Well, you have to. So what file are you looking to print?" They're like, "What do you mean file?" And I'm like, "You have to have a file to print. Like, you have to have something to print for me to print." And he's like, "Oh, can't you just do yours?" I'm like, "I paid for these files. You have to pay for the files. I'm not just going to let you play. I'm not just going to give you my files because I didn't pay like the licensing fee for them."
Right.
And they're like, "Oh, okay. Well, what if I just give you a few dollars for the licensing fee?" I go, "That's not how it works. You have to buy the file and pay the person for that." And like, you know, and that's, you know, normally most 90% of people who create 3D files online are okay with like, "Hey, if you want to print this for your friend, that's fine." You know, it's like, they just don't want you to go out and like advertise that you're printing.
I mean, that one amazing, tile thing, that like one that was like the super ultra mighty empires.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was only $30.
Yeah. And they said like, they laid it out too. They were like, "Here's the deal. Like, here's how we want you to, if you are interested in printing these for people, here's how we want to do it." They had a level where they're like, this is the level where you can just print this and sell it yourself. Like, we're cool with that.
Well, yeah. Well, that's not actually with most 3D printing Kickstarters do that. They put out a limited amount. They say like, "We're going to put out like 5 of this printing tier. You get a license to print it for either in perpetuity or for like a couple years or something like that." And that's what people do. So people will buy that tier and they will be the sole distributor of printed copies of that, which is fine. I totally respect that. I'm not going to go out and do that. But it's like, these people just don't. And then the guy, it ended up with this clone trooper. He goes, "Oh yeah. Okay. That's great that you did this. Can I, so here's the print that I want." And so he sends me this free print that he found on Thingiverse. I kind of pointed him to. I was like, "Okay." And then he goes, "I just want one." And it's like one figure. And I'm like, "You really just want one figure?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I go, "I'm going to print out this one figure for you and I'm going to ship it across the United States for you." He's like, "Yeah." And I go, "You know what? I'm just going to take a break from printing right now." I literally told him, I go, "You know what? I'm not doing commissions right now for this. I couldn't handle it with the guy." It was just like, it went so far over his head that I was just like, "I'm done with you. No more."
You should buy your own 3D printer, guy.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's cheap right now. I have did I tell you I got my Saturn, my big boy?
Yeah. You were talking about it.
Yeah. I don't remember if I was talking about it or not. It's pretty nice. Let me tell you, there are a couple problems though. So if anybody listens to the podcast, I know a couple people have reached out to me on the podcast about 3D printing through my Instagram. But with the Saturn, which is the big boy, there are a lot of problems that you wouldn't normally come across on the other machines. Like on this one, the prints stick really bad to the build plate. So it's like, you're just sitting there like with a fucking chisel going like, God fucking damn it. Get off the fucking printer. Get off the fucking printer. And then finally it will come off. And it sucks up resin really fast because you're printing three times the amount, you know? So you don't really realize how much more you're printing and how much more you have to order in order to do that. So that is an issue. I do still recommend the Pro or the Mars Pro as a good get into the hobby printer because it will definitely do exactly what you need to do for half as cheap as the Saturn. The Saturn's very expensive and it's a very big machine and it's fairly easy, but it's not a great learner machine. Like there's like machines that are $200. Just get that and that's a good learner machine.
Yeah, get a starter machine because I know there's all sorts of like, well, that's if you don't have a company like Titan Forge where they set up their thing to like print its own stand for you, you have to do a bunch of work to like create like things to keep support on the model right and so on and so forth. Because I've seen some of the disasters of 3D printing without the proper support structures and man, it's a mess.
Yeah,
it's
trust me.
A pile of goo.
Yeah, trust me. I've been there. I use my slicer. I put in my own supports, and you know, most of the time I just do it, and it's perfectly fine. I have no issue with it. Every once in a while, something will fail. I'm working on so back to that 6th edition fantasy project. I'm working on. I'm doing vampire counts right now. Blah. So because I found a Patreon that does essentially 6th edition vampire counts models. They're not one for one. Like they don't look exactly like the old models, but they look somewhat better versions of the old models. Their black coach went together 1,000 times easier than the old metal black coach. Yes. Like the old metal black coach was one of those models. It was probably
like the old metal steam tank.
It was like the steam tank. It was like the hell cannon. Just those fucking models that were just the worst things in the world to put together.
It was just terrible. I love metal models, but I like metal infantry models.
I think I'm there with you on that.
I don't like the big metal models because they always suck. They always fall
apart.
You
know what's a good metal model that went together fairly easy?
I have an answer, but what's your answer?
My answer is the Tomb King's Ark of the Covenant. What is that called?
Oh, that's really funny because that was the both of my answers were Tomb Kings. But yeah, the Casket of Souls.
Casket of Souls. That one went together fairly easy, I remember. It was not a lot of work.
That is correct. The Casket of Souls went together very well. And also the Tomb King's Bone Giant actually went together very well. Surprisingly. Yeah,
the Bone Giant did go together fairly well. I have a Bone Giant.
You wouldn't think so because you look at it and you're like, this is going to be a nightmare. But it actually... I managed to put them together. Like the first Bone Giant I built, I didn't even use pins.
I don't think you even need to pin the Bone Giant.
I eventually started to pin it because like you know, over time, just handling, you would soften the bonds of regular super glue. But if you just put it, if you're putting it together for a display, you don't need to pin it.
I remember that. Most of that metal, the big metal stuff that involved like putting together a box. If anything had to be a flush 90 degree angle, it would never be a flush 90 degree angle ever.
Right. Yes. That was the thing that was the work. Cause anything that was, that's why the Bone Giant worked so well. Cause it was ball joints. So you just like, you just stick the arm in and it's like, oh, hey, it fits.
So, I mean, I think something that, and by the way, this Patreon is Monstrous Encounters. If anyone's interested, they do very, very throwback, probably late 5th, early 6th edition style models. They're probably more 5th than 6th edition in all honesty, but they're a great throwback guy. He does a lot of cool stuff. He actually did something that he got a little bit of attraction for lately. He did an undead version of the Dungeons and Dragons party from the old cartoon. So they're all skeletonized and everything like that. So it's pretty good. And also, by the way, I did go to Spirit Halloween the day after Halloween to get my cheap costume. I had a choice between the full pumpkin suit, the suit that looks like it's like a three-piece suit, but it's got pumpkins on it, like David S. Pumpkins from Saturday Night Live.
Not David S. Pumpkins!
I know it's really dumb, but I just like the idea of the suit.
I like David S. Pumpkins, and I think one of the reasons I do like it is because it's so stupid.
Exactly. And then there was the Dungeon Master outfit. from the Dungeons and Dragons, and I chose a David S. Pumpkin suit, which I know, but I feel like I'm gonna get more wear out of that than, let's say, the Dungeon Master outfit. Like, if I had the Dungeon Master outfit, the only thing that I would wear it to is either Wizard World or C2E2 or the Ren Fair. And I have a Ren Fair outfit already. And I feel like that material that it's made out of would not do well in the Wisconsin heat of midsummer. You know,
yes.
Very sticky, sticking to my legs, that sort of thing. Don't need any of that stuff. So, but yeah, the this, back to this, what I was saying with the sixth edition build. Yeah, it's I've did a lot of that, having to support and everything like that. And I've had a lot of failures with it too. And even that was pre-supported as I was, as like when I got the files. So like the horsemen were pre-supported, and they even failed. So I had to have more supports added onto them. So I don't know. I don't know where else I was going with that. I blame the drugs. That's what I blame. Let's see if there's anything else on the Warhammer preview, if they previewed anything else. We should have started off to do this while it's going. They may be done at this point, but let's check it out.
Go, go, go.
I don't think that they are quite on to the next thing yet. I think they're still, oh wait, here we go. Oh no, they are done. The last thing revealed was Sigvald and the other Slaanesh warriors.
Yes. Okay.
I do kind of think though that those that the Slaves of Darkness, the regular Chaos Warrior Warband, not that great. Like I think that they're very cool models. Like, don't get me wrong. I just think that it's kind of like, huh, all right, they're Chaos Warriors and a wizard. Whatever, and the wizard kind of just looks like a resculpt of the other wizards.
Like I said, I just want the big lady to throw me over her shoulders and take me off to her cave. That's
snooze new.
Yeah, snooze new.
Yeah. She's she's probably a turf like Gia Carrera or Carino or whatever her name is. Have you been watching the Mandalorian this season so far?
I have not. No. I figured I would just watch it later when it's all done.
People are jizzing themselves over it. It's been okay. I mean, I think the last episode has like done well. The biggest problem is that I know Filoni and Favs are really trying to keep it self-contained episodes and not have an arc. But they do have an arc. So yes. They're like trying to balance out the arc with the self-contained so that they don't lose people who get like, can I jump in on the third season episode one? Well, yeah, you can. They're all self-contained episodes, but you shouldn't, because that's what an idiot would do. Only an idiot would have access to three seasons of a TV show and only start on the third season episode one.
Yeah, why would anyone do that?
Because people are fucking stupid, Steve. They literally do that all the time. Every fucking TV show.
That doesn't make any sense. Like, I understand, well, like, because, like, wasn't that mentality from, like, before when it was, like, hard to watch old episodes? Like,
exactly. That was the mentality of, like, why you couldn't have a TV show, like, and why TV shows like Hill Street Blues and NYPD Blue and Babylon 5 and X-Files were such a big fucking deal was because that they had this thing that they actually started the myth arc, you know? Like, that wasn't a term until the X-Files. Literally, and X-Files debuted like 92, 93.
There's FOMO.
What's that?
There's FOMO.
What's FOMO?
Fear of missing out.
Yeah, fear of missing out. But that didn't exist until like, the 1980s, outside of it, didn't exist in outside of soap operas until the 1980s, when you would see things like L.A. Law and Hill Street Blues was the first one that really did it. That was David S. Kelly, I think. He did that first, and that was like, it blew people's minds. It's like, wait a second, if something happens in one episode, it leads to another episode. That never happened on the Rockford Files. What the fuck? You know, like, people's minds literally melted out of their heads. Like, I can remember my mother being like, I can't miss this episode of Hill Street Blues or St. Elsewhere. I can't miss this episode of St. Elsewhere. This doctor is having a meltdown that's related to something that happened in the previous episode. And it was like a big fucking deal. And now, like with prestige TV, that's all TV is, and you have access to it through all of the streaming networks, 800 streaming networks. There's literally not a TV show out there, except maybe LA Law. I don't even know if I can find LA Law streaming, that you can't like start at season one, episode one. So there's no reason to do self-contained episodes anymore unless you're doing something like fun with it that really doesn't have to do with the myth, with the arc of the TV show. That's what's so frustrating about the fucking Mandalorian, is that they have all of this that you could build into it and have this great structure and arc for a season of 10 episodes, and they don't do anything with it because they're gonna have an episode where Baby Yoda eats fucking eggs. It's like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like there was an episode like 2 episodes ago, it was aliens. They ripped off aliens 100%. Mm-hmm. You will watch it and you'll go, this is fucking aliens.
Okay.
And you're just like, why did they have to do an aliens fucking episode that took away from, that was one episode out of 10 that takes away from the character development that we could see throughout the show. Any of the number of characters in there, including the Mandalorian, Baby Yoda, Turf Carrera, fucking Carl Weathers. Carl Weathers actually directed the last episode. And you have all these characters that you could develop, and you don't develop them because you got to have a fucking aliens episode. Mm-hmm. You know what? It was a great episode. You know why? Because I love aliens, you know?
Yeah, I mean, aliens is dope. Speaking of Carl Weathers, that sent me on like a quick like mental like jump thing where I was thinking about aliens, and then I thought about Predator, and I thought Carl Weathers, and I was like, oh yeah, that was super cool in Mortal Kombat 10 when they added the Predator. They gave Jax a Carl Weathers outfit. And then I thought they had the Predator music sting too when you picked the Predator. But I just thought about now, the newest character they just added to Mortal Kombat 11, fucking Rambo.
Yo, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to be Rambo.
It is Stallone. It's fucking great. Yeah. It's so good.
Stallone probably got a lot of money for that. And he was like, all right, I'll go in your video game. Is it like Wong? Is that what video games are like now?
Yeah. And one of his victory quotes is the best. It's just him with the M60 firing it in the air going, yes, legit. And I was like, that's fucking awesome.
Hey, Steve, remember when Rambo killed a bunch of police officers?
Yeah, I do remember that. Like, do you remember when that movie was dedicated to the brave Mujahideen fighters of Afghanistan?
That was Rambo 3, sir.
Yes, very good. Yeah, and I do remember when it was dedicated to the brave Mujahideen fighters of Afghanistan.
Yeah, the whole point of Rambo was that he was a vet that came back and no one took care of him, and so he ended up being like tracked down by an evil sheriff, and they had a whole confrontation out in the woods. Like, that was the whole point of Rambo. Rambo is not a pro USA movie, not in any sense of the word.
Not at all.
However, I did really like Rambo 4. The latest one I have not seen yet, but I did
John
like the
Rambo.
John Rambo, is that the last one?
I think it's called John Rambo, yeah.
Yeah, the last one I think was just called Rambo, or the fourth one was just called Rambo, and I really liked that one. That was the one where he's in Myanmar, and that, like, they have the really truly evil, like, Laotian, or not Laotian, Burmese general who's like all evil, and he's like trafficking young children and making them run through rice paddies that have shit run through, and he's like, oh, he's so evil, I can't wait for John Rambo to get him, to kill him. And then John Rambo kills him, and you're like, yay!
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, that thing that I wanted to happen, have happened.
Yeah, and that's exactly like what movies generally need to do to like hit most buttons, but that's what I'm thinking is like, man, I just need John Rambo to come in and kill this guy, and that's great, you know, but I still have to remember that John Rambo is really not a pro-USA character.
Yes.
Except in Rambo 3, where he helps the brave fighters of the Mujahideen fight the Soviets.
The Mujahideen. I have to say, they're just a random note, but my targeted ads are getting more and more insane. But I got a targeted ad on Amazon for a hentai comic, which is weird, because I've never purchased any pornographic material from Amazon ever. But
they buy your search history, so
yeah, I guess, I don't know, but the title is just tits exclamation point tits exclamation point tits exclamation point.
That sounds like a winner to me, Steve.
That's what I said. I was just like, all right, but here's the best thing. I have the reason I brought this up was specifically because of this review. I love this book from the front cover and in between to the back color. There are 12 great stories. Then that's story apostrophe S with big cartoon boobies. Four of the best are heart eyes emoji, heart emoji, the real Minori Chan, heart emoji, heart emoji. She's such a tiny mountain, heart emoji, heart emoji. Steel, heart emoji, heart emoji. What are you doing, sensei? Heart emoji, smiley face emoji. The artwork is fantastic. You will love this book. Heart emoji, heart emoji. Big boobies in bikini, bin kin. Sorry, big boobies in bin kin and lingerie. Misspelled bikini spells lingerie correctly. Heart emoji, having a lot of fun. Heart emoji, two people found this helpful.
Well, that makes total amount of sense. You know, I remember back in the day when they used to have to, you tried hard with pornography, and nowadays it's just, they don't even care. It's all slapdash. There's no love put into it anymore.
That, you know what? That's why you can't go with the produced stuff. You got to go with the doujins. You got to go with the doujin artwork for, cause those are made, those are the independent manga that are produced by like, just like the dude who like works in his, or lady who just work in their little studio. Those are usually pretty good, and they have a little bit of, and for the collector and all of us, they're limited print runs because they only have as many as they can afford to print. So if they print 200 copies, those are the only 200 copies that they made.
Oh, well, there you go. I have learned something today.
Yeah, there you go. And interestingly enough, some of the pathway from porn doujin artist to literally like produced anime is not as outrageous as one might anticipate. The anime Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, which you might have heard of because it was very popular when it came out.
Can I honestly say no, Steve, but that's not going to stop the conversation. Let's just keep it rolling.
That's fair. Well, other people might have heard about that one because it was, like I said, it was a hit. So there was a lot of people talking about it. But that anime, the mangaka for the anime definitely got his start, I think just like doing tons and tons of hardcore porn.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the way it usually works.
Tons of it. So it's pretty good. And then, yeah, just saying. So what I'm saying is, if you think you can draw and you want to draw porn, you know, follow your dreams, you can do it. Just don't try to make a tabletop game of it, because they're always the cringiest shit in the fucking universe.
Yeah. To quote Shia LaBeouf, don't let your dreams be memes.
That's right.
I was screwed up the quote, which is a fairly classic internet quote.
I do have two new things to talk about.
Oh, what new things do you have to talk about?
The first one is there's a new expansion coming for Kids on Bikes, which is the like basically Stranger Things / 80s Steven Spielberg movie game.
Here's a question for you. What do you think is the best John Williams soundtrack? Not the song, not just theme, but the best John Williams soundtrack. I had this conversation the other day. Because I know you're a soundtrack guy.
Yes, I love soundtracks. What is the best John Williams film score? I'm actually looking at his list because I want to make sure I don't miss any.
Well, I mean, I don't want to influence you too much, but I'm going to say his best and not my favorite. This is his best. Like this is different. This is like when you talk about movies, when you say like, what's your favorite Scorsese movie and what's Scorsese's best movie? Cause those are two different things. Right. So John Williams' best soundtrack to me, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I was about to say, like, the best single piece, bar none, is the Indiana Jones theme. Like,
well, yes. I mean,
the only challenger to that throne would be the Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park theme. That's my favorite. That's my favorite individualized theme.
So like the two of those would be going, like, those would be the two titans going head to head in the ring.
You want to know what's actually a close second for me in terms of John Williams' best soundtrack? And this is kind of blasphemy. And I don't think that I think that you might. You'll laugh.
You're not gonna like my choice. So carry on.
But my second best is Phantom Menace.
Oh, Phantom Menace has an excellent soundtrack.
That, exactly.
One of the many things wrong with the prequel movies, sound direction is not one of them.
I'm not a big fan of Attack of the Clones soundtrack. I think it was fairly boring. But I think that the Phantom Menace soundtrack is fairly fun and memeable, and I think it's great. But I do think for Last Crusade, from start to finish, is one of the most technically complex but also brilliantly synced soundtracks I've ever seen in my life. I just watched it recently and I'm like, fuck, every single note in this is
Last Crusade is excellent.
There's not a single wasted note in Last Crusade.
My personal favorite, War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds, really? Wow.
War of the Worlds. And I think War of the Worlds, there's bits in the sound, like the soundtrack, just as far as like complementing the film, it's just incredibly good. Like they did so, like the weird creepy sound of the Martians bleeding into and out of the orchestral score, like very good, very well. but Indiana, like again, Indiana Jones, obviously fucking phenomenal. Like that would be my, like is that it would be, it would, if you told me I couldn't pick War of the Worlds, I would just pick the Indiana Jones trilogy. I wouldn't pick a specific one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Indiana Jones trilogy as a whole is pretty amazing, but I think that Last Crusade is kind of like the culmination of John Williams' entire, like, pretty much like you can't get much better. Like in some ways the 1980s died when the 1980s ended with Last Crusade when it came out in 1989.
Yes. so this being all tied back into Kids on Bikes,
yes.
It was an RPG that was made. Like I said, that was that, like, you know, Spielberg / Stranger Things kids investigating the supernatural RPG, but they actually are releasing a board game. And
really,
this one very specifically would cater to you and your interests, because the board game name is the Snallygaster Situation.
Snallygaster?
Yes. Do you not know the Snallygaster? You're a cryptid fan. How could you not know the Snallygaster?
I don't think I know the Snallygaster.
That's fantastic. You absolutely have to check out the Snallygaster. If you're as a cryptid fan, you'll like it.
Is it like a legit thing and someone, not something someone just made up?
Yeah, nope. It is a legit thing. It is American folklore. It is a cryptid. It is a bird, reptile, chimera thing. Teddy Roosevelt proposed to hunt the Snallygaster. Like they thought it was like legit. This is a cryptid that like Americans were like, this is a real thing.
Yeah, I had no idea. It's a Maryland thing.
Yeah. So there you go. So yeah, that like
how come legit, they never covered that on The Wire?
Yeah. So legit, the Snallygaster is a thing that like obviously is a cryptid now, but like when the Snallygaster was, you know, originally purported, like that they were just like, oh yeah, that's real. Like that's just a real thing. Be careful. The Snallygaster can kill you. Be careful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the Germans, so they have a lot of problems.
Yes, the Germans.
We have to protect you from the Germans.
The Germans.
Snatch. I should give that a rewatch. I should see if that holds up. I haven't watched it in a while. I love it.
I'm out for a walk.
I loved that movie.
Snatch is Guy Ritchie's best film by a fucking country mile.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely the culmination of most of his work.
Yeah, and I would say it is unfortunate because he'll never make a movie that good again.
Like, didn't he do the Sherlock Holmes? Was it that Guy Ritchie?
Yeah, I think so. With the one with you're talking the,
RDJ
or Robert Downey Jr. one. Yes, it was directed by Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, I think those were pretty good. I mean, I don't think that they were perfect in any sense of the word perfect.
I like them a lot. I like those Sherlock Holmes.
You like punchy pugilist Sherlock Holmes.
I do. Well, I mean he was a boxer, man. That was the thing. I also like burnt out on the fucking couch, high on heroin, fucking smoking opium Sherlock Holmes. I like all the versions, all of the interpretations of Sherlock Holmes.
It's heroin. It's I'm not a huge fan of bumbly Sherlock Holmes as much as, you know, I don't know. My bigger problems with those movies is like when you try to shoehorn too much Sherlock Holmes lore into one movie.
Yes.
Like, oh, you have to have, you know, what's the fuck's her name? The one that he always falls in love with. She's always in everything like that.
I don't remember.
She was played by Rachel McAdams, which was another weird casting for
Irene Adler.
Like, you gotta shove Irene Adler in there. It was like, listen, dude, she was in like one story and she's only in this story for like 15 pages and all of the rest is them talking about her. Like, it's not like she's even in the stories that much.
Yes.
Or in the second one, they always they throw in a Moriarty, and it's like Moriarty's only in there for like one story. So let's like chill the fuck out about Moriarty.
I did really like the Moriarty fight though. I thought that was cool because they built up that like Sherlock Holmes thing like in the first movie and in the second movie where he does like where you visually see the scenario that plays out and then like it happens. So like I really, really liked that they had their fight. They like both of them were doing the fight in their head. And I thought that was very well done. I thought the fight was cool and fun to watch. And it was cool that Sherlock was like, oh, he's gonna beat the shit out of me if we actually fight.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, the that was a very good part of it. And I'm a big Jared Harris fan, so I can't find anything wrong with Jared Harris on that. I just always like
no, his Moriarty was excellent.
And I always just hate when people are like, you know what we need to do with Sherlock Holmes? Kill him off. Because you know what that did when fucking Conan Doyle wrote The Death of Sherlock Holmes? Mm-hmm. It killed his career.
Yes. Because everyone just wanted more Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, everyone was like, how dare you kill off Sherlock Holmes?
And well, I mean, like, they clearly like did not kill him off. Like no. they quote unquote killed him, but then in the same film, like did the like, yeah, he's not dead.
Like yes, I mean in the movie, yeah.
And I understand the reasoning of doing that because I mean they did it in the Benedict Cumberbatch show too. Because I mean that's part of, but that like the death and return of Sherlock Holmes is now part of the character. Like that's part of the lore.
I will give you that. I always find it just so like it's shoehorning in what Conan Doyle did, and like Conan Doyle, he did a lot of fucking Sherlock Holmes stories. There's a fuck ton of Sherlock Holmes stories.
And let's of course not forget Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century. I like Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd century.
With a robot Watson? Oh yeah, it was great. Yeah,
it had robot Watson. It was cool.
We have a Sherlock Holmes in the 21st century. His name's Batman.
I like that show. I thought that was pretty good. I mean, it's been I'm sure it's terrible because I've literally not seen it since I was an actual like literal kid when it was on TV. But I do remember enjoying it.
Yeah, the I remember how we got from there to the for the Snallygaster to Sherlock Holmes. Oh, it was Guy Ritchie, Snatch, and we were talking about other things. Yes. Okay, I'll have to look into this.
And the other one, there's a Kickstarter I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, what's the Kickstarter?
It's a cute game called Hibachi by Grail Games. The characters are all like there's a cute little kitty, a fox, a Shiba Inu, and a monkey. And they are, you are all playing as different hibachi chefs, and it's a card/dexterity game. So the board has your ingredients. So like there's like a spot that has like meat, onions, shrimp, et cetera, et cetera. And what you do is you toss your chips, your poker chips. So as you're playing the cards, you toss your poker chips onto the board to try and get like to the better ingredients, but your chips stay where they are. So if someone tosses their chip in, they can knock your chip off.
Oh, so it's like bocce ball.
Kind of, yeah. But so you also
bocce ball.
you might also accidentally knock their chip onto a more valuable ingredient. So you have
very true. Much like in bocce ball.
It's true. Yeah.
Which is Italian Italian curling, as I like to call it.
I like it. So it's already funded. There's 9 days to go left with it. It's very cute.
It's Australian.
It looks good. So, you know, give it a shot. It's Australian dollars, so it's not that expensive if you have American dollars.
Yeah, it's only 30 bucks.
Yeah, so remember, 42 Australian dollars is 30 American dollars. So just nab it. It's a good price.
Unless you're buying Workshop, and then 30 American dollars is 320 Australian dollars.
Yes, yes. We're not counting the Workshop inflation. and the hot and spicy edition, which is the one I would suggest, it's a very slight upgrade in dollars. It's only $45 instead of $30, but the amount of additional items you get is, I would say, pretty fucking massive.
Oh, that's cool.
Like you just look, it's the one straight down below the first thing. Like there's a lot more you get for just a little bit of extra money. You get an enhanced box. You get an expansion. There's you get wooden chopsticks. You get a bigger rule book.
Fried egg poker chips.
Fried egg poker chips, which is very cute because I let you get a sixth player into the game. I recommend it. It looks cute. It looks fun. I like minor dexterity games. I'm not a huge fan of like full dexterity games, but minor ones I'm okay with.
What do you feel about? How do you feel about Don't Break the Ice?
Don't Break the Ice doesn't require any dexterity. So
you have to use the hammer.
Well, yes, but when I think of dexterity game, I think of like true, like accuracy is needed.
Accuracy is needed.
Yeah, like with Don't Break the Ice, you just you pick your square and you just hammer it until it goes down. But I love Don't Break the Ice.
Listen, sir, if we're talking about the Mount Rushmore of tabletop dexterity games, Don't Break the Ice would not be on there. But if we're talking about the Mount Rushmore of regular games, Don't Break the Ice is right where George Washington would be.
Yes.
What's the one with the sticks where they have the marbles on the top and you're pulling out the sticks till the marbles drop? Is that that's not Tiddlywinks?
No. Isn't that Kerplunk?
Is it Kerplunk? I don't remember the name of it. I was looking at it the other day though.
Yes, it is Kerplunk.
What about Crocodile Dentist?
I like the Crocodile Dentist. There's actually new versions of that one now. Mm-hmm. There's a shark one. It looks really good. Shark Bite. That's what it's called. It's called Shark Bite. It's literally the same game. It's just a shark.
My wife took my son to the dollar store for getting something or other, and they had the old fishing game where you have the fishing poles and the fish like go around in a circle and they open up their mouths and close them. And so we got that one. I fucking dominated that game. Noobs.
It's just like when those kids have that little tiny like the basketball hoop that's like 2 feet tall or whatever.
Yeah.
I totally wrecked them in that too. I'm just like, give me the ball, dunk, and then I'd slap the ball out of their hands, denied, dunk, and I'm just dunking repeatedly. then they're crying, and I'm just like, while you're crying, I'm getting all these dunks.
You know, maybe if you stopped crying and started playing the game, you might actually get good.
Yeah, maybe if you stopped crying like a little bitch.
What?
Yeah, that's right. Body check. Send him flying. Bam.
You know, Steve, I don't know if many of our listeners are aware, but we are actually we're going into a soft lockdown here in the state of Illinois.
Yes, Illinois.
So we all got I'm not sure if people outside of Illinois have Amber Alerts, if that's a national thing. I think it's a national thing.
Yeah, I get the Amber Alerts on my phone. I got this one on my phone too.
Yeah, so... But outside of the United States, if a kid is kidnapped or, you know, if the kid goes missing, everyone's phone gets an alert. It's called an Amber Alert. And it basically tells you, you know, this kid was kidnapped. Look for this type of car, blah, 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 blah. And then that's basically it. Usually it's almost always
a fucking parent, too.
Yeah, generally. And the funny thing is that they usually will locate, like, it's like located around like a couple counties or whatever else that is around where this happened. So we actually got two of them just recently, like 2 weeks ago. Like it was like back to back. It was really weird. They don't normally come that quick. Like you maybe get one a year, and to have two in the same week. And so we got a third one yesterday from our governor telling us that like, hey, you should wash your hands. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. We really need to like scare me on an Amber Alert with like a let's wash your hands fucking alert. Like,
hey, you know what? With the way the average American handles themselves, yes, they do need to do that.
That's the whole point. It's like, yes, with the way that the average American handles themselves. But that's, do you think that the average American would look at that and go, maybe I should wash my hands?
Well, no. See, but for me, I get to enjoy the fact that the average American gets to look at that and be like, ah, I'm so mad. I at least get that little bit.
That's true. I got mad at it, and I'm, you know, I'm a card carrying Democrat. So it's like, you know, it's like seeing that, I'm like, okay, this is a gross misuse of power. Like our governor, J.B. Pritzker, who is a very, very rich man who comes from a rich family and actually has done fairly well with the pandemic. I'm not going to fault him that, but I'm like, this is a little much from JB. I'm like, what's he going to do next?
I mean,
send me a picture of his sandwich. You know,
the biggest problem with all of this is like I said, I mean, it's been repeated fucking ad nauseum, but like the state-based responses is not going to work. It's never going to work.
No, it's not.
You have to have a universal response. Cause like, yes, undeniably the states that did lockdowns sooner or more severe than other states that didn't, like Arizona, are having, you know, everyone spiking because, you know, we have freedom of movement. So you have the chuds from Indiana who just are like, masks are a communist conspiracy. You have those guys going into wherever the fuck they're going and just spreading it all over the place. so you have those guys, but like still the states that did actual lockdowns, their numbers are nothing in comparison to the states that didn't have long lockdowns or big lockdowns. The states that didn't are getting fucking obliterated.
Well, we're getting obliterated right now in Illinois.
Right. Because, and that's what I'm saying. Like, and our numbers are nothing compared to the states that didn't have lockdowns.
And the funny thing is like most of the fairly responsible counties, like DuPage County, Cook County, they're bad because they have a ton of people in it, but their numbers in percentage wise are not terrible. You go to these podunk places and like they're who have the signs up that are like fuck JB Pritzker. Cause it's like, oh, thank you for putting that sign out. So I know that I should fuck JB Pritzker. I would have never have known if you had not put out that sign. That gives me your political stance right there. Thank you very much, Gore Vidal, for that sort of political insight I would have never gotten from anywhere else. It's like, I'm going to put this out there because I'm proud to say fuck JB Pritzker. It's like, wow, man, that is incredibly brave to put that out there in one of the most red counties in all of Illinois.
Yes,
I'm
exactly.
So proud of you. You know, like Jesus Christ. But anyway, that was just me. Venting on the use of Amber Alert status to tell me to wash my damn hands. Like, the only thing that will work is literally, I think we need to hire game wardens to drive around the state in like Jurassic Park Jeeps and like tranquilize people and forcibly wash their hands while they're like tranquilized. I think that will help. Like, they wake up and they're like, oh man, what the fuck just happened? They got a mask on and they're like, where the fuck did this mask come from?
Yes.
I can't take it. I can't breathe. Oh my God, this mask. I can't breathe. Idiots.
Yes.
But actually that's funny that I even say that because I guarantee you that's what they're thinking that the Democrats are going to do now that they're in power is drive around in Jeeps, tranquilizing people, putting masks on. And the masks are just so we could track them, you know, because we don't have cell phones, credit cards, banking statements, Social Security, the internet as a whole, able to track people. We have to do it through masks and vaccines.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. It's just so stupid. Like, that's the thing, like the thing that annoys me about conspiracy theorists in general now is like, I remember when conspiracies used to circulate around things that were, I would say, let's say hard to believe. In general, like, you know, like the moon landing, like I like now having conspiracies, like believing in conspiracies about the moon landing now is stupid, but like that, like when it first kind of started, like, you know, around the time, it's pretty unbelievable to think that like people were able to do that. And of course, you know, the reason the moon landing was super hyped is because the commies beat us to space first, and you know,
the commies literally beat us to everything first. Yes. Except the moon landing.
They beat us to, they turned their feudal nation into a superpower in 50 years because of the power of communism. Get wrecked, capitalists.
I'm gonna push back just a tiny bit, Steve. They did a lot of questionable things to win most of the space race. Like, we didn't necessarily, I don't necessarily know, because probably some of it has not been released to the public. But I mean, a lot of people probably died or have died, not even probably, did die in the Soviet space program to get them out there first.
I do not like hearing these words you're saying, comrade. Perhaps you need to go with me to Gulag for re-education.
Dun da da dun da 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 da. I don't know why I went with the Tetris music.
Into the Gulag for you, because the Tetris music is Russian at this point. The Tetris.
It was Russian. It was.
No. Sorry, I misspoke. The Tetris music is Russia at this point.
Is Russia. Block fit in the hole disappear. That is the whole of Russian experience.
This how it goes. But the things that bother me are just so blatantly like, this is not a conspiracy, you're just an idiot. Things like, let's just go with the biggest one right now, the fucking election. Like, okay, so you think the Democratic Party, the party you think is stupid, full of idiots, and has no power, is smart enough to rig the election. Being able to predict that the vote would need to be rigged by millions and millions and millions of votes, because now, as we speak, Joe Biden has received more, 10 million more votes than the highest vote for a president ever. So they would have needed to, in their conspiracy, been smart enough to do that, to know that he was going to receive 10 million more votes.
Not to mention that Trump, he's only 6 million above Trump.
Right. Not to mention that they're all, they would also have been able to predict that Trump would have gotten millions and millions of votes, more than expected. Because so there's that. And then also, while taking the time to expertly and amazingly rig this election, they didn't do anything to any of the down ballot votes and just gave up this, like, the Senate.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's real good conspiracy, buddy.
Well, and I always like my theory, my feelings on conspiracy theories, my theory on conspiracy theories is that they're just fun think pieces. Like, they're good thinking exercises. Like, okay, what if the moon landing was faked? How could it have been done? What are the obstacles that would have put that in place? Or, you know, like that sort of thing. It's like, it's fun to talk about, like, just like what would need to be put in place for that to happen, like outlying factors and all that fun stuff. But actually, having that as a core part of your belief system, that's where I get a little like, Jesus Christ.
I like when Buzz Aldrin punched that one moon landing truther guy.
Was it Buzz? I thought that was Neil Armstrong.
It might have been Neil Armstrong. One of the men whose feet went on the moon punched a guy who said he
Buzz Aldrin, second man on the moon, kneel before him.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's like.
Get it? Kneel before him?
Yeah, I got it. That was
Neil Armstrong.
I was trying to fucking ignore it, but you had to.
Unless, of course, we count the Soviets that probably landed there first and died on the moon, and the Soviets were like, yeah, we're not going to say this.
They made it, but their ship crashed.
Yeah, I mean, they probably were on the moon, just a fucking wreck up there.
Yes, we are the Soviets.
You know, when we eventually get up there and have our moon colony with our moon cheese and our moon, our whalers on the moon, we'll probably find them.
I believe you mean mine the moon so heavily for helium-3, we destroy its integrity and destroy the planet Earth. I think that's what you actually mean.
Well, that could possibly happen. I mean, we'd have to do a lot to get all that helium-3 out of the moon. The moon's a pretty big place.
I mean, that's just one of the, I mean, you've seen what we've been able to do to Earth. Earth's much bigger than the moon. You don't think we could? Are you doubting humanity's ability to fucking destroy the moon, Joe?
No, I'm not saying that we couldn't do it. I'm just thinking that's going to take a long time. I mean, it will take a long time to really mine that moon. Unless, of course, the moon is hollow, which could possibly be.
That is true. They don't actually know that, do they?
What if the moon is hollow?
Or how hollow it is?
I don't, you know, that I'm sure that there's some data that shows. I mean, there was something. I remember one of Mars's moons, either Phobos or Deimos, whatever the smaller one is, they figured out like some sort of mathematical calculation that in order for it to function as it does, it would need to be like hollow or something like that, or not man-made or man-made or something like that. I don't remember what it was. It was something to say that one of those moons is like a spaceship covered in rocks, like a space Hulk, essentially.
Yeah.
But I think that they probably have figured out, like, the moon's been around for a long time, and we've been obsessed with it. So I think people have figured out, like, in order for it to pull the tides at a certain amount, it'd have to have this mass or something to be at this distance or whatever.
That's probably quite accurate.
My favorite moon fact of all time is the fact that the moon is just big enough and just far away from Earth enough that it is the exact size of the sun. So it's like a really, really astronomical, in no pun intended, odds that something, that our moon could be the exact size of the sun in order to give that perfect eclipse that it does. Mm. So that's like why some people think that it's like, it's man-made, or not man-made, but like it was made and put there as it is so that it could perfectly block out the sun. We just happen to live there. It, like if aliens did exist, they would come to Earth just for that simple fact, because it's so rare to see anywhere else in the universe. We could have space tourism, Steve. Let's get on that.
Is it really that rare?
Yes, apparently it is. Well, I mean it's rare in terms of what we've seen. I mean, in a universe of infinite possibilities, I'm sure it exists.
Also, didn't the moon used to be closer to the Earth, so then it would still block?
No, it was bigger. The moon was further away from the Earth. It's getting further? Closer. Yes.
Okay, so there you go. So, I mean, that just makes sense because it's big enough to block it, right?
Yeah, it's like the exact reason why, like, humans have, like, a 25 or 6-hour cycle, because the days used to technically be longer.
This thing I'm reading is that the moon was closer to the Earth and it's been moving apart.
Oh, maybe that's what
It's been much. Okay, so it says it's estimated that when the moon was first formed, it was only about 88,000 miles from the Earth, so it dominated the sky.
Yeah.
And the moon has been moving away from the Earth at about 1.5 inches a year ever since.
Yeah.
But over 4 billion years, it is now 225,000 miles away.
There you go.
And it will it will continue to pull away. And as it does, the ability of the moon to completely block out the sun will continue to diminish over time.
Yeah. So it's like at this specific point in human history, the moon is just big enough to block out the sun.
Okay, here we go. You ready? You ready for what you, we're never going to see an eclipse, a full eclipse again in 600 million years.
Yeah. There you go. And in 600 million years.
In 600 million years.
I kind of feel like we've gradually moved into Joe Rogan territory. I mean, we've been talking for well over, I think, 2 hours at this point, or close to. But yeah, I think we are in Joe Rogan territory. So I'm just going to tell every. By the way, best Joe Rogan quote I've seen is Joe Rogan is the Gwyneth Paltrow for Chach Bros.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. So I'm going to tell you guys to eat your elk meat and do your PCP. What is it he always tells people to DMT. Do some DMT, eat some elk meat, and watch videos of chimpanzees fighting. So
I'll tell you to hashtag go vegan.
Hashtag go vegan. Are you vegan now? Have you gone full vegan?
I mean, I've always been like mostly vegan.
You've mostly been vegan, but you know, yeah, you
like I the only thing that I was eating that was not plant based was eggs, and I kind of like cut off my eggs. So yes, I'm like kind of all like auto vegan because I haven't been eating meat for a long time.
You're done with fish too?
I never did it too frequently. It's kind of like, so like I was talking to my sister, I was like, I'm not going to be religious about it. So like, if you buy me some sushi, I'll eat it. I'm not going to like flay myself about it. I just won't go out of my way to buy it myself. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's the way veganism should be. Like you should mostly be eating a plant-based diet and just dipping your toes into, protein. High protein meats.
The only thing I will not eat meat generally. Like I will not eat meat even if you buy it for me. Like if it's fish, sure. But meat, I will not because it's unhealthy as fuck.
it's
so bad for you.
I just had some bacon. Oh, so good. So greasy. I'm going down my face.
I'm sure you're obliterated cold in 10 years.
Rubbing my chest with the grease, the bacon grease. Oh, so good.
It doesn't bother me. Like your obliterated colon in 10 years is going to really feel it.
Oh man. Like the giant meat shits that I have, they're just so relaxing. I'll just tell you that.
I mean, but will they be worth the colon cancer?
Well, dude, I grew up on the south side of Chicago. The fact that I don't have cancer already is a miracle. So everybody, that I think we will call the podcast here because I think we have gone about 2 hours. Maybe not 2 hours, close, but maybe about an hour 45. You go to our Facebook page, Game Classy Podcast on the Facebooks. It's the best way you can get in contact with us. Like, comment, subscribe on the YouTubes. Like, comment, subscribe on the iTunes. I should look up and see if we hit, like, before we quit here, let's look and see if we have any new, what's it called? Any reviews on the iTunes. It would be here. Oh, what the fuck? It turns out we've been canceled. No.
Yay!
I typed in game with a G instead of a C for classy, and there was actually a Game Glass podcast. I don't know what that means, but I am concerned that they are just kind of mooching off of us.
That's fair.
Okay, let's see. I don't think we have any new ratings as of late. It does not look like we had some from early and late last year, but nothing in the last. No one calling us too vulgar, which I guess is a good thing.
Vulgar.
Yeah, but you can like, comment, and subscribe on our iTunes, and that will be a good way of helping us out.
Finally.
You could also follow me on Instagram. I'm at Game Classy Joe. That's the way that you can see my painted figures. You could see I did finish my sixth edition orc army. That's 2150 points, fully done. Did a couple extra figures, just character figures, nothing like units or anything like that, because I wanted to stick to my 2150 points. I just had I had one of those, I had the wizard, the orc wizard, the classic one with the bone.
No, I love that guy. That's such a good figure.
I know, and I didn't have nowhere to put him in the army, but I was like, I gotta paint this guy. He's too cool not to paint.
I like that guy.
And I am currently working. Figures. I'm currently working on the vampire counts. I have the old Vlad and Isabel coming, thanks to the UK. I found somebody who was selling it for under $50 for the set. Thank fucking God.
Just surprising.
And that just bothers me so much. It's like, these models were not rare. Like, hundreds and hundreds of copies of them exist.
All of the metal ones are rare these days, like everything. Yeah. And you know what I think? You know what I think it is? I legit think it's just like the ones that got sold are just, they've been thrown away at this point. Either they're still in someone's collection, they're still in someone's army, or his like big box of D&D models, or they were just thrown away. They've just been thrown away at this point.
And actually, it was really funny. Do you ever see the movie High Fidelity? John Cusack.
No.
He was.
No, I have not.
He's a record store owner.
I know about it. That's the one with the jukebox over his head, right?
Maybe. I don't know about that in particular, but it's a classic movie. Cameron Crowe, I think, directed it. Maybe. But anyway, boombox
where he's holding.
No, that's Say Anything. Different movie.
Okay.
This was a movie. It was done a little bit later, late 90s.
I only like the only John Cusack movie I like is Room
1308.
I like that movie a lot. That was a very good one.
But this in the movie, there's a cut scene, and it's in the book too. It's a Nick Hornby book, so it's very British. So maybe some of our British listeners have listened to it or read it. There's a scene in that movie where a cut scene in the movie where he goes to a woman's house, right, and she's selling off her husband's record collection because he cheated on her, right? So she's like, "I'm going to sell all of his like most prized possessions, like his records." And John Cusack's character is like, "I can't." And she's like, "You can have it all for $200. And John Cusack's character is like, I can't do that. It's not like I would feel too bad doing that." It's like to the point where it's like, you know, most of us are kind of shit fiends where we'd be like, sure. But like, that's like such a situation where something is so rare. It's like having like someone selling their cheating boyfriend's Warhammer army for $20. Normally I wouldn't give a shit.
I would slap that $20 in their hand so fast and leave with that army.
Yeah.
I have no scruples. If someone wants to sell something for a price that's not like quote unquote fair, if they ask me for that price, I'll fucking give it to them. I'm gonna shit.
But it's like, let me give you a flip side with that. Like, let's say someone like a mother is selling their son who died in a car crash his Warhammer army, and she had no idea of its worth. That's different. Yeah, you'd probably be like, you know what, I can't do this. Like, let me help you sell this for the amount of money that's worth.
That's different. I would tell her. I'd be like, hey, lady, like, you know, you should probably sell this army. You should auction this army for, you know, your funeral. This could pay for all the funeral expenses. You should auction it. That's a different thing. Like, that's not like,
and actually that just happened in Australia. Like, there was a big story about it. Yeah. Like, so like a woman, her son actually committed suicide, and he had a ton of Warhammer stuff, and she took it to like a Savers or something like that. And the clerk who happened to play Warhammer was like, I can't do this. Let's do. And he actually helped sell the whole thing. And he didn't take any money for it and like donated the money or whatever. It was like a big deal. It was like a really very heartwarming story, but to something that's less heartwarming. I was, I had put up on Facebook that I was, and when some of the training groups, I'm like, hey, I'm looking for Vlad and Isabella. And this guy texts me, from the UK, and he has two mint condition blisters of Vlad and Isabella, like the yellow blisters, like pre-90s, like in gorgeous, like 100% mint condition blisters.
That's not what you want.
Well, and I go, and he showed me the pictures, and I'm like, dude, I can't afford these. And he's like, no, how much are you looking for? I'm like, I'm looking for like maybe like $15 a piece, like $15 a piece US. Like, this is, you can get $40 to $50 a piece on these. And he's like, oh, well, I don't really care too much. And I'm like, I can't do this from you. I can't. It's like, you're too nice. I'm not going to do that. You sell those for like $50 a piece and take your 100 quid or whatever. And, you know, buy yourself something nice with it. And I found another guy who sold me like the two of them.
Fucking pickle and onion chips, man.
Yeah. Like, I found a guy who sold me both of them for like $22, and they were horribly painted. And I'm okay with that, 'cause I'll just strip it and repaint them. And that's like, I feel much better than like taking that and like these two mint condition blisters and opening and ripping them open like the savage I am to paint.
Like, I just throwing the blisters away, just straight in the fucking
trash. I feel like those belong in a museum somewhere.
That's, that's Pat B's catchphrase. It belongs in a museum.
Like find a guy who's like really into collecting the mint and blister stuff, and he's gonna put them on a shelf or a pegboard or something and just stare at them. Like that's the guy who needs to spend that money, who deserves to spend that money on those figures because he's an idiot and shouldn't spend $100 on two mint and mint condition blisters figures. Yes. But anyway, so I don't know where I was going with that. But anyway, so Steve, until next time.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when. We all had a good time, and we're sad to see it end.
Game Classy.